I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for the last real stage of the Tour de France, stage 20. This would have been, you got to give credit to ASO for the route design. It was an unbelievably well-designed stage, I thought, and we had actually wall-to-wall action, 134 kilometers. It's basically building upon the Vuelta stage 20s stages of the last few years and just elongating the climbs. No flat just about in this stage, starting with a category 2, 11.5Ks, 5%. That's, can I do maths? 5 points for Ciccone. Then there's another two Cat 2s in quick succession after a valley, after 7-8% climbs, 5 and 5 again, and then another Cat 3 before the two longer climbs, the Petit Ballon and Col du Plateau Varsel. We're in the Alsace-Lorraine region, or the Vosges region near Germany, obviously in the east. 9.3Ks, 8.1%. Descent, no flat into the Plateau Varsel, 7.1Ks, 8.3%. And the plateau on that is about 6.5Ks, 7Ks long with a flat finish. So a hard stage, difficult to control. A lot of teams wanting to get in the break, Benji. But with GC over, the media have been rewarded with an outstanding story that sort of began on one of the transition stages. Can you lead us in, give us the background to this, the manager drama?
Yes, sir. We've had loads of managers in the past discussing other teams and discussing other managers, but I feel like this Tour de France has been a special one. Initially, we had Cofidis, their CEO, their manager, roasting Jumbo-Visma at the start of the tour. Once they had their first victory, they started basically saying, oh, Jumbo with all their moths and all their signs and so forth. See, we can win a stage two at Lafayette and so forth. So a bit of a dig at Jumbo there, but it has escalated. It has escalated to hashtag Beergate. Hashtag Beergate between Madiot, the manager of Groupama FDJ, and Pleuger, Richard Pleuger, manager of Jumbo Visma. And I think it's probably a story that has a context behind the scenes that we publicly don't know 100%, as in both of these managers are part of an association of teams, and there's a bit of quarrels between those teams in that association internally. But publicly, the story started with some beer on the rest day, right?
Yeah, so I think, yeah, Pleuger was, I think he said, let me read it out. Pleuger said he saw Groupama FDJ riders drinking like two or, you know, half liter beers on the rest day, and there's Jumbo having no alcohol policy at Grand Tours, that's for staff as well. And Mario, yeah, he reacted very strongly to that and said, all right, this is a translation, but you get the essence. I've seen the same, this is the essence. All right, stop. On every rest day, my riders and coaching staff get together for a bit of conviviality. The staff drink a beer, not necessarily the riders, but it might be. And even if they had, it wouldn't have been half a liter. I was at the table. There was Perrier, not San Pelli or Vici Cadala. So that's kind of, you know, a bit of a red
That's
flag.
That's kind of sad.
It's pathetic, small and pathetic. It's a disgrace. Oh, it goes on and on, on and on. Anyway, it says Pleuger should shut up. So I can see both sides here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Mario's got to defend his boys. Straight up, got to defend his guys. And yeah, Pleuger didn't name FDJ, but the L'Equipe journalist connected the dots and has built this into the bonfire. So congrats to that guy. Mario's got to defend his guys. Now, so, you know, I understand it. That being said, I know for a fact that many teams, including top teams, guys are drinking multiple beers or alcohol during the race, not even on rest days, the night after stages, and like guys trying to win the next day. So that's just so people know, it's actually, this happens. Even though, you know, you might be, you know, peaking for an event, an amateur event, you're like cold turkey and take it all seriously in the Grand Tours, there's guys drinking alcohol. But yeah, I also get from Pleuger that he's frustrated because Vasseur took a shot at him. And basically, ever since Jonas won the TT, you know, there's been a lot of articles
and
being very critical of him and Jumbo and Jonas.
Yeah, there's been articles about suspicions and so forth, and that was where he responded to, right? You're now drinking a beer as a Jumbo employee. That is crazy.
Contractor.
Contractor. My bad. Correction. But I will say, when it comes to... where was I again? Are we talking about...
He should have just said, we have a no-alcohol policy. We do...
exactly.
We just try to do it. You just keep it about yourself.
Exactly. You shouldn't have mentioned other teams. I will say, however, he was trying to basically defend Jumbo Visma in the initial conversation, right? Because he was going into why Jonas was able to get such a gap and so forth. He started talking about the aerodynamics in the time trial, the cornering and so forth, that an Australian, I think SBS showed like Gerrans or something was on screen showing like the differences between Vingegaard's TT in the corners and Pogacar's TTs. He was trying to like get all those things set up, the paint on the bike that was scraped off to reduce the weight and so forth, the weight of the bike being under 8 kilos and so forth. And all those arguments, I'm 100% fine with him sharing all those details to try and make his narrative, make his, whatever you call it, his side. And for me, it went wrong when he indeed started talking about other teams, and he probably shouldn't have done that. And he probably realizes by now he shouldn't have done that. But it's enjoyable
for us
to see.
Sometimes you just get into fuck you mode too.
Yeah, that's true.
You're like, come on. I've seen guys, getting pissed every night.
Yep.
And you're like, are you serious? So I see both sides, and it's great. Listen, the GC fight was over. This was great yesterday, so I really enjoyed it. I wonder if Netflix, because both these teams are in Netflix next year, will touch on this. It's just a spat, and there's also, this goes back to the AIGCP, which is the Association of Teams. There's internal feuding at the moment between Matteo and some of the French teams, and Plugger, who I think is the president of it. And so there's a bit of history there as well. So just watch that space. You know who's been, and you know this, as you mentioned, Benji, Lotto with Delacour and Vasseur, it's been, managers have been, you know, saying their piece. I actually quite like them saying what they think. But you know who's been quiet? Lefebvre.
Yeah.
He hasn't come out and said the guys are performing like shit, you know, before the Asgreen saved the tour. He's been quiet.
Too busy selling his team, mate.
true, yeah. He's like, Bacalus, like, can you just be quiet while I'm trying to shop this? Just don't say anything while I'm trying to shop
every
this
word
thing.
Lefebvre says reduces the prize by a million.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the drama. We'll see if we won't spoil it. But it was going to be a big day for FDJ and Pinot.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think about that. But into the stage. We knew it would be chaotic at the start. There's a Lotto Destiny team time trial. Didn't go anywhere. Campenaerts, I don't know who will get super competitive. I think Alaphilippe might edge him because he's French. But Campenaerts...
deserves it.
Campenaerts got the recency bias. Alaphilippe was in a lot of breaks early. But yeah, between those two. Trek and UAE, this is curious. First climb. They both just decided...
Mm-hmm.
Let's have no break go on this 13K 5% climb. Trek and UAE swap off with Trentin and Pedersen. And then Ciccone gets the points, and it's a shorter stage for UAE to control. I didn't expect that at all.
I didn't really see that coming as well, but I kind of like the strategy for a bit. Temporarily, I like it. As in, for Trek, I understand it. They want to make sure that Ciccone can get points at the top of this climb and try and secure the KOM jersey as soon as possible. So that's obvious. They were even controlling on the flat fully by themselves to keep the gap towards Campenaerts manageable and so forth. So that's the vibe I see. And the consistency was okay on the climb still, because they were still doing that. People were attacking UAE, was trying to close it down gradually. I feel like Marc Soler isn't the best at this, though. As in, he had some moments where he actually bridged to the breaker and then realized, ah, oh, fuck, this is not how I'm supposed to do this, and then dropped back and started pacing the group again. So it's like he realized halfway through how we should do it. But anyway, they were able to control everything pretty well. Campenaerts got caught again. The bus who was in that initial breakaway got caught at the foot already. And we had a lead out. Skjelmose, Pedersen, well, actually Pedersen, Skjelmose, and then Ciccone for the KOM points. Gall not going for this. So he said before the stage that he's not going for KOM. He wants to secure his top 10 position.
Is that stage, maybe
too passive?
I think he had no chance. If I was advising him, I would have probably agreed with that, because he could in theory go for it, but realistically, I don't see him on a 5% climb, on a 3K 7% climb, out punching Ciccone. And Ciccone's finish line is the last cat three.
Yeah.
He can crawl up the two cat ones. Goal can't do that. He could lose GC positions with a Gaudu or a Guillaume Martin who were waiting in the wings, or a Coos. So I kind of actually understand it, that it had a low probability of success and could actually backfire if you do a lot of anaerobic efforts early in the stage that other guys don't have to do. So I get it. And I would like to nominate Pedersen for best domestique of the tour almost.
Ooh.
Like he's up there for me. He has been unbelievably good in terms of, Kuss and Laporte, I think, probably maybe more impactful on the race, I'll grant you. But I just want to shout out Pedersen.
Maybe the combination of Skelmos and Pedersen in one rider was a really good domestique, because I feel like they both were so valuable. Skelmos, his GC chances were gone in week one, and he was able to transform into first breakaway options and then switch towards helping Ciccone. And I agree, Trek really switched that around nicely. And I was hoping at that point that they would secure KOM, because they were really the only ones properly going for it. And yeah, you mentioned it, Pedersen, that last sprint he did past Vingegaard to take points away from Vingegaard. That was strong as well, while Ciccone secured that. But then we get over that climb. We get over the Ballon d'Alsace, and there's still attacks, as in Ciccone and some other riders, Alaphilippe, I think, went on a bit of an attack on the downhill. But the action there was basically controlled by the peloton until we had a crash in the group. A crash by two pretty important riders in this race. Carlos Rodriguez slids out and his face scrapes on the floor, basically.
Yeah.
I was really worried for a concussion, because he jumped on his bike relatively quickly to the point that I don't think he got an imminent concussion test. And to be able to scrape your head on the floor, you usually have to hit your floor on your head. But he came back, but another rider that was just behind him slid out as well, GC Kuss. And that is the end of GC Kuss. He tried to come back a few times. He fought the entire stage, but his face was also kind of fucked, you know?
Yeah, he was really banged up. And Kuss actually initially was in the group quicker than Rodriguez. And I didn't see him banged up straight away because everyone was focusing on Rodriguez. And then Kuss seemed to be actually much more hurt, or maybe Rodriguez, they were equally hurt, but Rodriguez just, you know, he's trying to defend fourth, and that's Ineos' top place on GC. And at the same time, the crash of Rodriguez has caused a split. And so Vingegaard there's basically a breakaway group caused by that crash.
Yeah.
And Vingegaard's in there with Van Baarle, with Trek, with Bagil, or however you say it. And Jonas and he are not pulling.
Yeah.
And UAE are chasing frantically behind, and it's a big break. Pidcock's in it with a teammate.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised that they don't pull. As in, he's 7 minutes ahead. I don't think they need to benefit from a situation like this anymore.
I think that, they didn't want to benefit from a crash. They don't know who else has crashed.
Yeah.
But then Bagil is like, if you're not going to pull, UAE are chasing doubly hard because you're in here. Can you get out? And I don't believe that either. I think UAE were chasing that group, whether Jonas was in it or not, but Bagil didn't think that.
Yep, I agree with you. I think they were just chasing for the stage. And it was interesting because UAE switched strategy at some point, it felt like. Because when that group came back, they caught that group eventually. We did see UAE respond in a different way. Instead of trying to control every breakaway, they suddenly tried to slip Soler in a breakaway. That didn't really work out. And we still had a group that was actually formed ahead. And that group was the following. It was Pidcock, Ciccone, Skelmose, Nylens, Bargill, and Van Hill. So Skelmose, Ciccone, once again, to the order. Pretty strong breakaway. But then on the Col de la Croix de Mona, I think that's it. Col de la Croix de Mona. Fuck, that was terrible. Anyway, I'm really sad. Bora attack, team attack. Bullet smashes it. Then we've got in the wheel Haller, Jungels, and Hindley. And there wasn't immediate gap on the likes of Van Baarle, Vingegaard, and so forth. And then there were like seven riders maybe in that group, and then there was another gap on other riders. And do you think this was a reaction on Carlos Rodriguez's crash and maybe the weakness there,
so,
or do you think this was pre-planned?
It looked to me like reacting on the Rodriguez crash, because they weren't controlling the brake. I didn't see beforehand. So to me, that's what it looked like. They got the order wrong because Paul had actually basically dropped Haller, I think, and then they didn't go anywhere and it stopped. So Kuss is gone. He's dropped at this point. His top 10 is forget about it. Rodriguez is coming back. He does come back and he looks okay for now, but, you know, not a great way. Not a great way to start when you got two of the most difficult climbs to come in the stage. I think, where could Hindley? Hindley was a long time behind Rodriguez, though. Yeah. So,
full crack or nothing.
Yeah, true. If you got to crack him early. And this is what was weird, Benji. As you said, brakes start to go again, and Soler's jumping in them now. And I'm thinking, because I saw Pogacar shouting at the radio at the top of the first climb. I thought, as Pogacar told him, oh, I don't feel good. Go in the break, you, Micah Soler, and everybody. But then that break got brought back, a new break forms, and suddenly, and who was in that break? It was basically Trek going for Ciccone points, just mashing it with Ciccone, Schelmoser, Nalens again, Barguil, Van Hills, Pidcock, he was very good today, and bridging across was Matawaz, Pino, Uran, Izaguirre, Vamaka, Harper. So FDJ are getting... No, and they used Kung as a tug buddy, right? This was the... Actually, they did good tactics to get Pino in the break today.
I agree. They really used the tug buddy system. I checked. It's actually an Urban Dictionary now. Like, really? It is on there. Tug buddy definition. And it's really fun to see that because the definition on it is the following. I have to say it. A thick, strong friend to help you achieve victory. Example sentence. Rubio's tug buddy Rojas was keeping the gap to Nizzolo in check while Hilly and McNulty winked at each other. Whoever put that on there, absolute legend. But anyway, back to the race. We've got Pino trying to bridge to the group ahead, and we're arriving at one of those like next climbs again, and I'm not sure if this was Grospierre. I think it was, and we see Pino basically launching from that group towards the front of the race. Somebody is also following on a bit of a gap there, but Matawaz was temporarily done with his work, called on to Harper and Sofofo, who was in that group, but Pino was the first to bridge towards the front of the race. Ciccone, in the meanwhile, is fighting for the K1 points, crosses the line, takes the points, hands in the air, celebrating. I love that stuff. I bloody love that.
Pino lost the race here. And this is actually, quite in... And it's kind of true to form in a way that he was incredibly strong today. Like, Pino was unbelievably strong. Sorry, just one of the kids ran to the backyard to get a soccer ball. He's got Matawaz with him. Matawaz is a tank. We have a medium mountain rolling section. You do not want to get rid of Matawaz before Petit Ballon and or tire him out or attack him. And so the play was no surging. Everyone rolls through, including Pidcock and Barguil. And you spend Matawaz. Matawaz takes double pulls on these 7% sections. You can save a lot. And he's pulling against Soler, who's tired, or Bjerg, who's tired. And then UAE, Groschartner, they might have to use him earlier. So he spent too much energy in this middle phase, Pino. And or maybe even in the later phase that we'll get to. But, you know, that's ciclismo, no? That's that's how it is, you know, riding on...
Panache.
Yeah. And so, yeah, behind UAE are controlling. So obviously Pogacar feels good because they're aggressively controlling the break. And we get to the Petit Ballon.
Yes.
And Ciccone, as you said, is wrapped up K1, which I was happy about, by the way. Finally, a rider who's targeted it.
Mate.
Wins it.
Your prediction. You're on fire with predictions. You predicted K1 for Ciccone. You predicted the exact stage yesterday. Like, you predicted that three riders would get away on that hill and that Mohoric would win the sprint of those three riders. I don't know. You've got like, some kind of like magical aura around you in these last couple of days, or what's wrong?
Yeah, it's podium and being strong.
You had to mention the Yates podium as well, didn't you?
Dude, Yates podium. We'll get to that. I'll take my victory lap later. Yates podium is what I'm most happy about. How could you predict that the second on the Queen stage of the Dauphiné could possibly podium the Tour de France? I know, but anyway, they get to Petit Ballon. Pino goes crazy. Barguil gives him a lead out. I think they're friends. People said they're friends. I don't want to just assume that because they're French. For sure, Barguil was not chasing him. He sat in that wheel of Pidcock and Harper and did not take a pull.
I think so as well. And the interesting fact about Petit Ballon is that there are these French groups of Pino fans, probably international groups of Pino fans, the Pino Ultras and so forth. On the Petit Ballon, this is his home region, there was a section, It's called the Pinot Virage. There was actually a location on Google Maps for where this event was going to be, where all the Pinot fans came together, all aligned by the road, four rows thick, five rows thick. This was truly beautiful to see. And the fact that Pinot starts shredding the group at the bottom of that climb, he knew those fans were there. He knew that this event was set up by Arthur Vichot, one of his main friends, ex-French champion, ex-Groupama rider. And I think I kind of disagree with your move earlier, as in you said that Pinot's move might have lost him the race on the previous climb. What do you think about the fact that these fans were there, hyped him up so much that he went too deep on this climb, and that might have lost him the race?
That too. Like, think about this conventionally.
Yeah?
You have a cohesive breakaway of five strong riders. Barguil, mm-hmm. Harper, who I picked for the stage and has been very strong, Pidcock, who's strong, and a teammate, Madouaz. You have the second last climb, and you have a very difficult last climb. You have the peloton at 1 minute 10. Option A, work with the group the whole way. They work with you on the descent. Drop them if you're the best, which he was. Pino was the best on the last climb. Option B, attack at the base of the second last climb and do the entire 35Ks solo. And so went with option B. I was starting to believe, because Groschartner was behind for UAE. He wasn't gaining on Pino. Pino was gaining on him. The gap went out to 130. Pidcock was on about 20 seconds, 25 seconds, with mm-hmm. Barguil always in his wheel, Harper yo-yoing. And Jumbo Visma, Kuss is gone. Jonas basically just has Kelderman with him.
Yep.
And he's their last guy to pull, so he's not offering him yet. Eventually, Kelderman does pull the last part of the Petit Ballon. That takes the gap down to 115. So now I think his Pino blown his doors too early, hyped up by the crowd. And it was an amazing scene. Like, that crowd was crazy. And the adrenaline must have been just pumping.
This is one of those moments that the Netflix show will so hard try and milk, because it's such a good moment. It's a moment like when Gilbert was on La Redoute for the last time. That was about 20% of how this felt for me. Because Pino was at the front of the race. He was at the front of the race with a possible chance of winning the stage. I didn't really 100% believe it was possible, but he was flying up that climb, and to be able to do that at the front of the race with all these fans in his home region, that was, I don't know what you call that. Like, we call that chicken skin. Like the small goosebumps. Yes. That's completely different than chicken skin, but I'll take it.
Anyway, Pino does a good descent. His descending seems to have improved. It's also roads he should be familiar with, but he does a good descent. Pidcock closes, it says the time gaps today were a little bit suspect. Says he closes 10 seconds, then it starts to go back out again. Then we see Pidcock getting dropped on the descent by Barguil and Harper, and I don't know if that was because there was a lot of sprinting out of corners. It wasn't just a technique descent. And then we get onto the final climb, and unfortunately for Pino, Kelderman's been smashing. The gap is down to 55, and UAE, they put Micah on the front, and Micah just starts to drill it. And I'm like, he's not going to make it, because 7K is 8%. You got to factor in that the GC guys can close 20 seconds in an attack. And so there's Micah and Yates still to lead out, and Micah's good. And so it wasn't looking good for Thibaut Pinot, unfortunately. And the big bad boys, UAE and Jumbo, were closing down on him. And so Micah does a lead out. I thought Yates would go. I thought he would go, but he was actually allowed completely to ride his own race today by UAE to defend against Rodriguez.
I don't necessarily mind that. I think it's a good idea for Yates to secure and defend this podium. But when it comes to Pogacar, he's only there for the stage at this point. It's too late to do anything about Vingegaard. He's 7 minutes behind. He just wants the stage. So I think it's a fine decision. And I'm pretty sure you think it's an okay decision as well, that Yates gets his freedom here. And Pogacar, we're waiting for an attack, right? Because if he wants to win the stage, he needs to either attack, or he needs to be able to make sure that the gap towards the front of the race is closed. And at that point, the only way you could do that was attacking, I would expect.
He actually surprised me, and he went earlier than I thought. I did think they'd use Yates just to start to, not to blow himself up, just to do a little lead out and also test Rodriguez. Because with the Rodriguez crash, you can also adjust and be like, realistically, I thought there was 0.0% chance Rodriguez ever drops Yates on that final climb. No chance.
Yeah.
After the
crash. Especially after the crash.
Yeah, after the crash, zero chance. But Pog goes early, and it actually creates, and this is the other discussion point of the stage, a really interesting situation that is advantageous for UAE, and maybe we talk about it more in the off-season, and it is why, maybe tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but why I was talking about co-leadership a lot. On these sort of climbs, not after a 200K stage, Pog's thrown a huge dig in. Bang. Put Jonas on the limit. Not threshold on the limit, but he's put Jonas to the point where he can't just attack off that pace, because Poggy's just done 40 seconds full sprinting. Jonas has to recover too. And so Jonas now has Yates coming back. And it's a real tactical play for UAE that plays out a bit later. Almost luckily for Jonas, Goal comes through. Stronger than Hindley, stronger than Simon Felipe, maybe initially stronger than Adam Yates. Goal, I didn't expect this on this climb. This is a 20-minute climb after a short stage. He's motoring, and he basically just starts pacing.
And to be clear, at this point in the race, it's logical that Jonas Vingegaard doesn't ride with Pogacar alone in that situation, because he knows that if he relays with Pogacar, and if he relays at that point until the top of the climb, that he's going to lose a sprint afterwards.
No, I think
You think he should ride alone with Pogacar at that point?
What? Okay, so you let Yates come back. It's an easier climb overall. You lose the sprint 100% of the time.
It recovers Pogacar anyway, but you need to attack him at some point. And I think if he keeps relaying, he might not be able to do that.
I think you're more likely to win if you create a situation where you're relaying and you make Poggy lead you out for a K in the sprint, because Yates is way too far behind to wait. Yeah. And you've also made the climb overall harder. Yeah. And so now the climb becomes easier because you've done it less hard than you could do it. So I think of all the options for Jonas to win the stage, for his win probability, he got lucky that Goal was there to set a decent enough pace, but Goal, he's 2 minutes 10 behind Hindley. And he's riding for his team car was saying ride for the stage. And he, to me, looked like he started riding for GC. And because he was just pacing, but yeah, I think Jonas should have ridden, to be honest. I don't see the point in just surplusing and riding next to Goal and just looking at Poggy over and over and over. Because, like, if you don't really care about the stage, and you don't have to, you've won the tour. That is what everyone wants to win. You've won a stage. Then the Contador is just, you just relay with Goal and, you know, you literally sit up and let Poggy win the stage. I didn't really understand surplusing, easy climb, no attack, because he can throw in a dig. And if he gets dropped, so
who cares?
What?
Yeah, I've got two things. I fully agree that he should have attacked at some point on this climb. Because, first of all, he's 7 minutes ahead, like you said. So what's going to happen? He was just so paranoid about Pogacar dropping him, even though he's a decade ahead. He was riding like he was 10 seconds ahead in GC. And that's just fucking boring. Like, I won't lie, that was fucking boring. That's his decision, but I was hoping to see some more panache, to say it in Pinot terms, from Vingegaard today. And to see Goal on that level, I agree. I will say that in that scenario, at that point, it's always the likeliest scenario that Pogacar wins the stage. That is clear, especially with Yates and so forth behind. But it just kept going with Goal pacing towards the top, and I was waiting, like, Vingegaard in the wheel for a long time, Pogacar in the wheel for a long time, and they just didn't attack anymore. From Pogacar, I understand that, because for the stage,
he just needs to
sprint. Like, he can
let them tow him the whole way, win the sprint.
Yeah.
He can let Adam Yates come back, and by the way, this is what happens behind. The Yates brothers cook up a devilish plan and work over Rodriguez. So Adam Yates does a lead out with Simon Yates in his wheel, and then real hard pace. Simon Yates attacks.
Yeah.
He lets it go, even though Simon Yates is, you know, in theory threatening his third. Not really. He's too far back. But in theory. And then he waits for Rodriguez to pace, and then he attacks him and bridges across to his brother, and they relay across to Poggy. That was masterful. It was masterful what they did. And now, exactly, Pogacar now has his teammate coming back, like on stage one. He can't lose. He can't lose, because we're over the top of the climb. There were no further attacks. And it's the perfect situation for Pogacar. And to be honest, at that point, you know, what really can Vingegaard do?
Yeah. Well, the only thing he can do is attack with 2K to go and hope that he gets separation, or hope that Pogacar has a terrible sprint today.
Nah, he's losing this sort of stage.
He's losing the stage 99% of the time at that point.
And listen, that's fine too.
Yeah.
And so that's what happens. Yates comes back. I thought there was going to be, I think Simon tried to attack, but Yates marked him. And then he did a lead out. And Jonas actually tried to jump Pogacar early in the sprint, like he did maybe on Juplan. And Pogacar wins the sprint easily, wins the stage. He was very pumped about it. Who came second? Goal came second, much deserved. He also, like, Goal, you know, didn't have much of a chance to. I didn't really know what Goal was doing, frankly. I actually, we can talk about Jonas. That's real nitpicking. Of course, for neutral viewers, you want to see him throw haymakers at each other on the final climb till the end. So that's the neutral fans want to see that.
Like, and Jonas has been very entertaining for the last like 19 days. Let's be honest about it. He's been less attacking than Pogacar, but that's because of the situation of the race as well. On Tourmalet, Vingegaard was pretty fucking attacking. The day before,
he attacked him 60Ks out on Tourmalet. That's pretty aggressive.
Exactly. That's pretty panache. Just on this specific stage, I'm a neutral viewer. I just want entertainment. And at that point, if I see a group of three where Vingegaard's just like not even really trying to win the stage, just paranoid about Pogacar, then I'm like, okay, I kind of want Gull or Pogacar to win. But I agree with you that Gull at that point was also not making the wisest decisions, but I guess, I don't know, he was probably just happy to be there.
Yeah, I mean, stage top three back-to-back for Asia Tour, still good, and still good UCI points. So, you know, he still took some more time, finished strong. But yeah, of course, the play is to hope for chaos, go with the Simon Yates counter. But yeah, Pogacar wins the stage. Gull second, Vingegaard third, Simon Yates fourth. Yates, you know, he did the lead out, lost 7 seconds at the end, but obviously Rodriguez was dropped. Bargui and Pino were not too far behind with Bilbao. They were on 33 seconds. Was Johannesson in the break? Did he do that from the GC group? Johannesson finished 50 seconds down.
GC group. Yeah,
that's pretty
good.
He
was with Rodriguez. He was really fucking good today. So, you know, X has loads of top 10s this race, right?
Yeah, 8 or 9. Maybe
what do you buy with it, though? If you're UnoX, are you happy about this Tour de France?
I think if Alexander Kristoff was being paid 150 grand, they would have ridden differently.
Yeah.
Earlier on.
I think so as well.
That's probably the only regret they might have. But overall pretty good. And listen, it's their first tour. Like, it's tough to criticize them for how many have they ridden another grand tour?
I don't think so.
Didn't they do their first World Tour stage race last year in Catalonia?
Catalonia, you're right. And Dauphiné this year?
So it's not like, you know, it's tough to criticize them for making decisions in the car the same like a seasoned World Tour team that's done 25 Tour de France's. I think overall very positive, but that's a really nice result from him. He finished with Micah and Hindley on 50 seconds. Rodriguez just behind them on 52. I'm looking to see anyone else. Guillaume Martin on 3:33. Somehow with that performance still sneaks into the top 10 because Kuss unfortunately really suffered. He finishes 20 minutes back today, completely falling out of the top 10 on GC. So here's the revised GC. Vingegaard wins the tour, 7:29 ahead of Pogacar. Yates, Adam, that is, in third on 10:56. Simon moves up into fourth on 12:23. Great Tour de France for the Yates brothers. Rodriguez, unfortunately, maybe from the crash, maybe not, probably finishes on 12:57 in fifth. I think that's where he finished in La Vuelta. I can't remember. Bilbao in sixth. And Hindley in 7th, Goal in 8th, Gaudu 9th, Martin 10th, Pino 90 seconds out of the top 10 actually because Martin didn't lose too much time. Gaudu crashed also on the Petit Ballon descent where Contador, not the same spot, but I think Contador crashed there and he was clutching his quad.
Side note.
Yeah.
Contador crashed there, but let's be clear here. Vincenzo Nibali had already destroyed him on the cobble sections before then. So.
Maybe.
Let's not talk about, what if Contador didn't crash? Me. No. Nibali secured it. And he won that Tour de France with 2 seconds more. No, actually more now. With 10 seconds more? 6 seconds more? Then Vingegaard is winning this Tour de France. So who is the real best GC rider of all time? Vincenzo Nibali? Maybe not.
I mean, the shark got a little bit, he's got a lot more in his toolbox.
Yeah, but he got slaughtered in a lot of...
I don't think he got the watts, I'll be honest.
Nibali's never ridden on the level that Vingegaard is riding, but I'm a Nibali fanboy, okay?
It was curious to watch. This is what was funny. Gaudu wants the whole team around him, right? No Demar. And Madouaz has dropped out of the break and wasn't, and was still riding in front of the peloton when Gaudu had crashed and was potentially losing his top 10 on GC. I was like, you want to drop him back?
One difference is, Nibali would have attacked again today.
On the descent of Petit Ballon, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, but also in the last portion of the race. Because Nibali attacks too much for his own good.
I mean, Nibali won Sanremo with a sort of finesse attack almost on the Poggio when no one, when everyone was looking at each other. But yeah,
but he's
about
also
Nibali.
Lost the... Okay, sorry, enough I had to bring Nibali guy. In the conversation.
So yeah, shame for Kuss. I think Pogacar was very, very happy and UAE were very, very happy. What does this mean, Benji? What does this all mean?
What do you
Pogacar winning this stage? Like, his team were saying he had one bad day in the tour. Yeah, but I mean, he's not sick.
Pogacar would not have won the Tour de France if he had no bad days either. Because Vingegaard was just better.
Yeah.
And you can say all you want, but Vingegaard is the best GC rider in the world, and Pogacar is, in my opinion, the best rider in the world. And that's hard to compare because... just the versatility of Pogacar when it comes to classics and so forth makes him a better overall rider, but Vingegaard for me is the best GC rider, and that's 2 years in a row that he basically, well, that his team and him, got to give the team some credit as well, that they kill UAE over the span of 3 weeks. As in, I don't believe the actions of Jumbo on the day itself, were super decisive to how Pogacar dropped. I think it's the fatigue that they build up over 3 weeks with continuous pacing, with continuous working, and then knowing what parkour fit Vingegaard the best as well, which is Courchevel, that deserves credit.
And patience. Like, and it's also risky hinging everything on one stage, and that also is not true, because Jonas attacked on Marie Blanc. Like, he attacked this. Yeah. There is a recency thing. Listen.
Yeah.
Did Jonas maybe ride a little bit defensively today? Yeah, okay.
He's not a boring rider.
No, but I think today was a product of overconfidence on Colteray, where he paced and paced and paced with Poggi in the wheel, and Poggi beat the shit out of him and took 24 seconds. And so I think it was a great tour. And yeah,
I agree.
I also, but yeah, with Poggi, it's
clear. He's a racer.
But it's clear to me that Poggi was in fine condition today. They need to figure out what happened.
Yep.
On stage 17.
And I feel like UAE is not necessarily learning publicly from what we hear. It sounds like they're not learning from the last 3 years, because I feel like in the three Grand Tours, it's always in a similar situation that Pogacar tends to lose a lot of time and a small amount of time. That sounds really weird.
Everybody. Not just to Jonas. He's getting dropped by Gaudu, by Jorg Zimmermann, put a minute into him.
Yeah.
Gonna try to sign that guy.
Question. While we're at it, because we might as well keep continuing this question. A lot of people in all the media are talking about Pogacar's influence of the classic season on the Tour de France and so forth. I think riding them and being able to complete them and so forth doesn't have a major impact on the Tour de France. I think crashing in them might have a pretty solid impact on the Tour de France, but I'm not sure it would have changed the outcome of this Tour de France if he didn't crash in LBL, because Vingegaard rode at a level that I haven't seen before. And Pogacar rode at a fucking good level too.
Yeah. Pogacar's fresh watts were better than I've ever seen him do before.
Yeah.
Like Puy de Dôme. He dropped Jonas. Didn't crack him, but... And it wasn't even like a sprint either. He dropped him. He dropped him in the last 5 minutes. So he was at a really good level.
It is nice to see that both show humanity during the Grand Tour, as in that they both had moments where they collapsed.
And weakness. And as you said, like, but I don't think Vingegaard ever collapsed.
What is his weakness? Because like, I feel like he's got less than last year, that's for sure. And I feel like it's very difficult for UAE to be able to fight against them, because in the mountains, in the pure Queen Mountain stages, the big ones...
Decision-making.
Decision-making?
And that's why you need the two.
in Ray's decision making by himself, right?
That's why you need the two to create difficult situations. It's my view. Or a third guy, or a Remco, or a someone else, a Pidcock, a Gagan Hart, someone near enough to their level or at their level. And then it's not just a, because when he has the Watts and he just looks at Pogacar and then creates a gap and he's like, well, I can just defend now because he's solid, because he didn't have the day like Pogacar did on mm-hmm. Lowe's or Marie Blanc. Yeah. Colteré, he lost that time because he was overly aggressive, I think. But we'll do a full Tour de France recap. Let us know what you think. But yeah, Rory Pogacar, I really don't think he should change anything. Maybe he doesn't do... The thing is, right?
Skip Canadian Classic, skip Lombardy, do the fucking Vuelta, dude, please, for me. I want it. I need it.
Ayuso won't be happy.
Inject it in my blood. I need to see him in the Vuelta.
Ayuso Pog. Remco.
Ayuso Pog versus Jonas and Roglic. I want them both in the Vuelta.
We don't know if Jonas will do the Vuelta or not.
But
who
I
knows?
Want it.
I mean, yeah, that would be great. Imagine that could be the. But yeah, I think, as you said, if you do San Remo, E3, Tour of Flanders, Amstel, Flesh Liège, there is a good chance you will crash. There's like a decent chance. And that eventually happened, unfortunately, because each crash on its own looks unlucky. How did this happen? But if you do all these chaotic races, the probability is you will crash. But that being said, I don't think he should change anything because he could have still won this Tour de France if Jonas had a terrible day, crashed or something, and he literally won like every race he did beforehand. So I don't think he should change too much, frankly.
One sentence. I want to bring up a sentence that I'm reading from Matthew in the chat saying, Jonas is an incredible rider, but I think he would really struggle in any scenario where there is more than a single other contender for the race.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
What happens if Remco's there and the GC gaps are close mm-hmm. and he attacks and they look at each other? I mean, that could go for anybody. Maybe Pogacar's overly aggressive. We actually haven't seen Pogacar. And listen, in reality, that very rarely happens. The Giro's actually the only time recently. Well, the Giro, that often happens. And we just saw Almeida Thomas Roglic. But in the end, usually two are stronger and they just work to get rid of the other guy. Like when G and Roglic were attacked.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's Remco. We need him next year. Tour.
Let's talk about tomorrow's day.
Are we doing a pod?
Are we doing a pod? It's Champs-Élysées, my friend. Well, we're doing.
We will.
Are we doing two pods?
We'll do two pods. Women's. Yeah, by the way, make sure you... We will have wall-to-wall coverage of the women's races, both on Legendary's YouTube channel and also on LRCP.
From the start to the end, every stage.
We're not doing a watch along every minute of coverage. Didn't do that for the men's. But yeah, that's early, the women's race, so we'll do a separate live stream straight after, and then we'll do a Champs-Élysées live stream. It usually finishes at like 9:15, horrendous, afterwards. But no Cav there, so my anticipation significantly lower. Let's preview it. How many Ks, whatever. I think the break can win this year, Benji. I think this is the year. I think it is. Because look at all these teams. Okay, Quickstep for once don't have a sprinter. Yeah. Asgreen can't feel the chain.
Yeah.
Lotto, they'll throw all their trucks at it. They got no sprinter. Bora, I mean, come on, Bora. Let's not go for Mayus. Let's try and attack with Pollard and Mayus. Pollard also is flying. EF. Let's just go for it. Put Albertson under pressure. This is the year.
And not only that, do you reckon there's also a possibility for a late attack? I think Vanderpool's lead out might be too strong for that, for a really late attack. Because like didn't Asgreen or Lampard do it last year or the year before and almost, well, not almost, but
got
some competition in there. Well, Vino did it, so maybe
Jonas
Fedorov can
did
do it.
It. Jonas Rutsch always did it.
I'm in the Fedorov camp. Needs to be a Kazakh rider. Otherwise, it's not allowed.
This happens every year. There will be attacks in the last hour of this stage from riders. And you'll be like, no way this guy's in the tour. No way.
Moscon or something.
Yeah, you'll be like, where the fuck have you been? That will happen.
Magnus Cort. We've seen him
barely. I saw him today at the start and then gone.
Yeah,
Magnus Cort. So who are you picking?
Are we going to go both brake riders?
You can go for whatever rider you like. It can be Philipsen or it can be a brake rider.
I made my rule. Vino did it and he made the rule that only Kazakh riders can win on the Champs-Élysées, so Fedorov is winning this year.
You're going with Fedorov? Damn. I'm trying to think.
Askren is a good name, man.
I'm going with Enkhorn.
Ooh.
I think Enkhorn will do it. And
I think he'll get slapped.
Yeah, probably. But it happens once a decade or two decades. But Enkhorn,
What if surprise? Everybody expect Alpecin to lead out, and then
they go with Van der Poel.
Philipsen jumps on Groenewegen's wheel, and Van der Poel launches a late attack.
That's the play. He might not have it though.
We would be the kind of people that would be trolling tactics in the last stage of the Tour de France just to make it entertaining.
I want the Netflix series. I want to see Rudolph on the bus tomorrow morning. I love it. I love seeing Rudolph talking
Van der Poel
to the guys.
Proposing to Rodhoff, and you always say Rudolph, it's like the reindeer.
But... yeah, Rudolph.
I want
to the I'll do the conversation.
Yeah.
Yes, Bears, four stages. Come on, can I go for one? I've been, you know, I try getting the break every day. Mathieu, yes, Bears is the best chance. Get on the front. Behind Jonas. Do the leader. Come on. Oh, I agree, but there's no but. No but, Mathieu. You said you agree. There we go, boys.
That's what will happen. Point.
That's what was going to happen. And it's correct. He's correct. Go for if you get Philipsen into a sprint, he will win.
That was legendary. It's anyway. Like Frison's impression of Sagan. It's like the
and
same.
It was a hard tour again this year. I made one attack yesterday. I can't do it as well. The Rudolph one I've mastered. I've been practicing. All right. We're out of control. We'll see you with Sean. It's been a long tour, man.
Go Fedorov.
Go Fedorov, go Enkhorn. We'll see you with the recap of Champs-Élysées. Or first, the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift stage tomorrow, and then the Champs-Élysées stage. But I hope you enjoyed it as always. See you with the recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.